CPAC members?
I just had a question. In El Paso, what some of the other districts that you have worked into us have offered your services, and which of the four plans did you use?
We haven't done any work in this part of the state.
At all?
No. And I guess the reason is basically geographics. We've done some staffing work at Clint ISD. We've talked to Anthony ISD more about staffing analysis. It's just mainly this is a program that we started about 2.5 years ago. So we didn't intentionally focus on the Central Texas area. That's just sort of where the districts that we're interested were coming from. Now, we are working in Iran Sheffield, which is in West Texas, just around the corner. It's probably 6 hours from here. That's about a $15 million three-year renovation. That's one where we're doing full-blown management. We've got a gentleman there 3 to 4 days a week. We're pretty much running their maintenance department as well. They have two maintenance staff. It's a small district. It's a large bond. But as a result, we've found some cost reductions, and they're actually adding about $1 million worth of additional projects and taking an additional $1 million out of fund balance to match that and do some synthetic turf and some other improvements. So we haven't done anything this far west, not because we didn't want to. Most of the time, schools would think, well, it's too far.
We haven't done construction services.
Correct, yeah.
And I think that's an important point. Kenya TOISD has used TASB significantly. The pay scales that we just said for our employees were done by TASB. So they have multiple services, not just construction,
policy.
For all areas of school districts, and we use TASB on a regular basis. Martha Carrasco, our HR person, probably talks to TASB twice a week. And we're very, very familiar with the organization. We've just never used their construction services side, nor has any other district in Region 19.
And again, this was just something that our board directed us to do 3 years ago. I was hired 4 years ago to start developing maintenance operations facilities type services. We started the staffing analysis, started doing facility assessments, and now we're actually working. We've gone through sort of the whole process of evaluating needs and deficiencies, helping with bond programs, facilities committees, and then that has rolled over into construction management as well.
Just one more question on the corporate project management plan. Who actually takes the lead on that, managing with different people?
They'll have a one program manager, and they may have a site superintendent. It's set up. It depends on the firm also. There are several different models.
You mean like with the board?
With the board, and then also having you all involved. So at that point, who would actually take the lead on that? It was actually somebody from the district, and then somebody that would be hired
Not the corporate, but the TASB model.
I'm sorry. And then using you all. Who would actually take the lead?
I could see it can be almost anyway. But what I would see happening is probably a couple of options. For example, one option may be that we decide it's smartest for the district staff and or contract staff to handle these projects entirely, for example. Well, then they might do all reporting for that. But that's just one way. Maybe TASB handles these or something. That's one way. Another option could be, on the other end of the spectrum, is TASB teams involved in all of them. Staff is doing these roles. We're doing these roles, reinforcing is a good word of all ago. The next issue then would be, ultimately responsibility might be a question. Who's responsible to make that call? Or at the end of the day, you always need to get down to one person somewhere out there representing you with an owner. Your contracts with your contractors and design firms need one person ultimately on there. And we need to have that discussion. Most of my experiences, I'm in that role, or used to be in that role. It doesn't have to be that way. It is, again, it depends on the best plan. We may decide that, Jennifer needs to be that person. And that might make a lot of sense, and that's fine. In my end, it doesn't matter. What matters to me is that we're making sure the information is flowing back correctly, and we're making good decisions. I mean, it'd be a failure if we have the wrong person in that role and we're not getting decisions made. In construction programs, we've got to make some quick decisions. We've got to follow the rules, get it done right, And you can't just sit around and watch. If the project's, you know, if we're sitting around and watching, or we've not set up our contract administration correctly, wrong person or procedures and all these other things to get into, many districts don't really have any. So it becomes muddy to make a decision or a change order or, oh, we've got to go to the board or we're going to go to CBAC or whatever that is. We really need to decide how that should go down. I've done lots of these things.
Taking some time up front and developing procedures, not just for the construction projects and maybe the template for the RFP or whatever the delivery method is, but stopping and taking a few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month at the beginning to say, here's what maintenance, the expectations and communication requirements of maintenance is, here's what CMAC and here's administration and the board. Taking your time to establish those things actually saving you time and money in the long run. The other thing is, I had a point about, I hate I did this in San Antonio, so if any of you were there, I remember. This is so embarrassing, I apologize.
Well, developing that protocol is key. And I'm not sure what it is today, but we definitely have to establish what the protocol should be.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say this. I'm very comfortable in us being that responsible person if that's the right thing for the district, and a lot of times it is. How we report is another part. I'm usually most comfortable handling the reporting so we can make sure we report it well. But again, if we're blending, there's other ways to do that. I mean, a lot of districts don't have the same staff either. That's why I want to really make sure we're comfortable.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
The CBAC, some time ago, has continued to recommend that we hire a person who would report to Jennifer. And he would take care of all the little jobs, and there's a ton of them. You're aware of that. You said it was very complicated, and I agree. And this person would be hired by the school district, and his duration, his job would be to oversee the project, all of these projects, be on board 8 hours a day, or whatever, 6 days a week, be paid by the bond issue. He would be employed immediately and terminated upon the end of the bond issue. And if he needed help, he could call on you people. That would be part of your
option.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very important that you have somebody representing the school district at each one of these projects, talking to the architects and getting the schedule. It's going to be a nightmare. Scheduling all the construction between four architects. And I kept pushing for that, and you know, your appearance here tonight, that's why I wanted to come and see what you had to offer. And I think we could use, the board could use some of your, the things that you could provide as far as overall oversight.
Mm-hmm.
But you need one person reporting to her, and she could probably handle the other job, the eighth grade, the high school, the pre-K. School that's on now. She could have that, and he would concentrate on all the rest of the projects.
That's a great
point.
Is
there anything wrong with that?
Well, I like the concept of it. The concern is one person's probably not near enough, frankly.
A lot of it is one person.
Right.
Your organization would be the other half of that.
That could certainly work. Now the concept is good, the logic is sound. I like it. I got to say, I'm thrilled. Everybody here is looking for some help. One of the biggest issues we see is letting your design team and your contractor run everything for you,
mm-hmm.
and you won't even know what you missed because they'll cover it up. And they're not all bad, but we've been through that. So any amount of looking or oversight you have is better than none by far.
Right.
Just a little work goes a long way. And again, we want to optimize that for you, whatever the right amount is. And we also want to make sure that you've got some folks that can look at things. I mean, you have so many different projects on the campuses, and are we representing correctly in the field? You know, are they trained up enough? A lot of times, we've even trained up some folks from staff to mm-hmm. contract
like
services. We'll really guide them throughout what
like
to look
that.
For, what to focus your time on, even they have limited time to. But you're on the way.
Question. I really liked what you said about the audits.
I do too.
I've done it you know, compared to what y'all do, Mickey Mouse construction work, but, you know, you just see it all the time. People cannot help themselves. Oh, we'll get sodas for everybody and just go ahead and put it on your bill. Now, is that really wrong? You know, it was $5 worth of sodas.
Yes,
well,
it
probably
is.
It isn't in the long scope of things, but really, you know, should they be? They can buy their own sodas.
It is
wrong. You know, and that is just a minimal thing that I see happen. I am so taken by the fact, I didn't realize you could do the audit. And what I want to know is, so you do the audit, you find, oh, they've just ripped you off all this money. Now, are they going to pay the money back, or is it...
Depends when you do the audit.
Squeeze blood out of a turnip, sorry.
That is a great question. And I'll tell you, the number one thing to do is before you sign your contracts with designers or contractors, we make sure the right tools are in that contract.
Okay.
And I will tell you this, and we work with probably the top lawyers in the state. I haven't talked to your attorneys, but we want to make sure there's some things in there that protect us. Some of the craftiest, most experienced, well-known, good names who do great work.
Yes.
Their work is top quality, but they've been doing this for a long time. I think the quote I got from the owner of a company, I can't tell you who it was a good session, was, we've done it this way for 20 years. He said, I believe you. Well, you're not doing it here. And I mean, it's an awkward issue. But what happens is you find out too late.
What
you just said is exactly right. Keep your retainage, even if you have the retainage, which, you know, generally is only going to be 5% of the work project.
Right.
And there's some rules on that. You can't be more than so much. How do you do this? Well, the real key is auditing before you're done.
Auditing along the way.
And before they set a guaranteed maximum price.
They do set a guaranteed maximum price, but that's just a fancy thing.
Yes, I agree.
That's really good marketing from the agency as well. Doing it early is so important.
Yeah.
Like anything,
and
like
continual.
We talk about recessions. You catch it early, not so hard to do. You catch it late,
it's hard to.
And we have a district right now, did an audit, and they only owed, you know, tens of thousands left, and they were only holding that much money, and they realized they had overpaid a lot. They had actually tried to audit internally. They just couldn't get the data, or they got some data, and they get covered up with paper trails, and I mean, it's complicated.
Understandably.
Anyway, and we finally get it uncovered to the end, and they're having that same question, what do we do now? And I don't know what they're going to do. Stuff's about to be.
So what I'm hearing is you do it every step of the way and don't finish paying them off till you've done an audit and you made sure they did what they said and they paid what they were going to pay. And
set that tone early.
Do you do that like in the project management? Do you have that like when you do your task analysis and you put your project in? Do you do that audit within the within that?
Yes, if we're managing a project or helping you manage a project, it's an ongoing process.
Okay.
It is not in the AIA documents
the
way it should be. There's some things about audit and showing books, and if you ask them, it's right there, and there's a wonderful two-page section on, we have to show you the books. It's not enough.
Well, I have to tell you that we took, I believe I cut it out of the TASB Lone Star magazine. Early on, when we started this, you had an article written about how don't use the standard AIA contract.
You know who writes
those? I tore that out, and for y'all's information, took it to the school district's attorney and made sure that we weren't taking the standard contract, that our contracts, I think if at some point you end up looking at ours, they're not...
If you do end up with them, I'll say we're so used to backing into those, or they've already been entered. And they're certainly the standard by far, because that's what everybody else is doing. We really figured out how to edit the contracts pretty good.
Okay.
It's taken a while.
And we actually had a staff attorney that was instrumental in recreating all the AIA documents. And if your attorney is a member of COSA, Council of School Attorneys, he'll have access to those.
And Dr. Murphy, could you put down to make sure we match somewhere that make? I think we're good, honestly, but, you know, it never hurts to look again.
One of the things.
Well, we've only completed one of the architect contracts as of at this point. That's the pre-K-8 one. The, the other architects' contracts are still in process.
I would love to look at those contracts with you.
And could you make sure Mr. Blanco knows to look at their go-by contract?
We've been, you know, I'll tell you one thing, we've been trying to set up some of these talks with the attorneys and us about these contracts. My experience is the best attorneys are their attorneys, and that's what they do, and they prepare you to litigate and to protect you and your liabilities, and that's very, very important. It's huge. It's not everything. Most attorneys don't really know construction. Even the construction attorneys, they do legal stuff. They don't do construction. They don't really understand, particularly cement risk.
Cost avoidance issues.
That's correct. And the practicality of things. So there's, and I mentioned our talks, the balance, your ease of litigation with other things in your contract to make it the right contract. Mm-hmm. It's not always, don't just do everything the way the attorney's doing. So there's some things you can do.
I was asked to present on that topic, construction auditing. We'll be presenting at TASB this September with an auditor from Round Rock ISD and a general contractor. So we're going to get someone's perspective that there's a few general contractors out there that will bring this information to the service without having to be asked. Few and far between, but he's going to point out some things that we may not know to look for. So if any of you board members...
And they all say they will, by the way.
So that'll be available in September.
I have a couple questions, very short answers. There's over 1,200 school districts in Texas. How many have used your construction services?
We've worked with probably over the last year, again, because it's about a 2.5
year. 2.5 hour program, yeah.
Probably on construction, hour 10, you've been involved with how many? So probably 15 with the construction. Right now we've got almost 10 that we're working on with bonds that are being passed November and May, that are bonds passed that we're also helping them with design as well as programming.
So you help them actually develop the bond for election?
Correct.
How many employees besides yourselves are in this TASB construction services?
We have four in our staff right now. But we've got what we focus on when we bring new staff on, and we sort of, because we're a nonprofit organization, we can't bring staff on and wait for projects. And again, we're sort of building steam here. Not everybody, Dr. Murphy wasn't aware of our services until San Antonio, so a lot of schools don't know about it. So we can't just go pull out a lot of staff without having projects. But the people that we are looking at are school background, construction background, and waiting for us. They're either about to retire, so they've got 20, 25 years experience in the school business. So the nice thing about TASB, we have access to all of these people, and they want to come work for us. So we have the ability to bring someone in that doesn't require a lot of training. They've got that school policy and construction background. A
couple more questions. We're a growing district, as you can see what's happening up on the mountain. How many of the districts that you have worked with are in a similar situation as we are in?
Not too many. I mean, not too many schools are actually growing at the rate that you're growing. I would say probably two or three of the schools that we're working with right now are growing.
Is that just main growth? The growth rate?
The growth rate, yeah. Okay. Particularly to the growth rate more than anything, because a lot of school districts are actually contracting. Very few are expanding. San Antonio, probably a couple of them.
You know, but a lot of, I mean, particularly in bond work, probably most bond elections are from growing communities, I mean, at least more so, kind of less now, but it's traditionally that's the case. But being in Central Texas, almost all of them are growing. I mean, we're certainly used to how you project forward, and we've seen that go good and bad with the district next to us, the district I live in. They overprojected, overbuilt, and they were really suffering now. But they were faced with some extreme growth.
There's schools locked up that they can't open.
I mean, spurts of growth are really difficult to handle correctly. If you do enough, too much, it's very difficult.
Are you allowed to name the districts you're working with? Can you just rattle some of them off?
Growing districts.
Growing districts would be Dilley ISD. I don't think about it. Taylor ISD. My ranch echo's not growing that much. Crosby ISD in the Beaumont area.
And then just others in general?
Yeah,
Thrall. Port ISD, Aspermont, Rock Springs, Fayetteville, Italy ISD, Fort Sand ISD.
And last question, you defined the tipping point or threshold where basically district staff are unable to handle projects. Is it a defined sort of tipping point or threshold, or is it just on depending on the district? Because we were
it depends small. On the district, because each district has different expectations and assigns different responsibilities to the maintenance department. For example, the district I worked at, we had 5,600 kids, pretty comparable, you know, just 400 less than what you had. We had 850,000 square feet, about 150, about one campus less than you did. We had more staff. We had roughly 21 maintenance staff, whereas I think you have 17. Mm-hmm. We had 45 custodians. You've probably got 60 or 65, maybe. We had 4,000 work orders a year. She has their system. I say she's only been here a month. But roughly 1,600 work orders. So there's a few signs to me, because I've been in that role where I knew how much work was needed to be done. We had master plumbers, we had apprentice, we had helpers, master electrician, we had a locksmith. So we were staffed a lot differently. We were able to maintain things, but we did not have them make capital improvements. Yes, they built some cabinets and some ADA ramps and some smaller things that I think you guys have taken on yourself. The simple answer to your question is, I think at the end of the day, you guys have 300 work orders that you didn't complete last year. Out of those 1,600, that's 15 to 20%. That's pretty significant. The work order should be, you should have no more than 5%. We averaged about 2% that weren't complete each year. The other indicator, as far as if maintenance has enough time to do what they're doing, is every work order, the majority of work orders, should be complete within 72 hours. That's an indication that if they're adequately staffed. Now, of course, I don't know what non-maintenance and operations duties they may have. They may have crossing guard duty. They may have bus aid duty, custodial / grounds / maintenance. That's a real general overview.
Well, let me just say, we enter a lot of our capital improvement projects, our small capital improvement projects, as work orders. And so we don't really have that kind of like ability to distinguish between what is maintenance, like he was talking about the core duties, and what is an improvement. So a lot of those work orders that don't get done, it's like build a wall. That's not a work order, you know. Okay.
It's not 72 hours either.
Sounds
like
or resurface a blacktop.
Well,
exactly. Yeah.
Well,
was that just recently done, or was that just? That's been in the process.
No, those are like it's like a work order that doesn't get done. Can you resurface the blacktop? Well, a guy can't just pick up and do that. That's an improvement project, and that'll go in as a work order.
So there was really never any guidelines on a work order, because most maintenance departments have guidelines
on how they're like entered. But they can be entered.
A work order, exactly.
Exactly. So in this leadership thing, that's one of the things that we'll be talking about with the assistant principals and the principals, how to write one.
Next week, we're having a 3-day leadership conference with all our principals and assistant principals, and she has
this is one of our hot topics.
3-hour block to talk to them.
That's one of the key points of maintenance, is not just what her maintenance staff knows and what the procedures are for them, but what APs and principals and department heads also know.
Mm-hmm. I have some questions.
I'm going to have to excuse myself. I told my husband I'd make him dinner and I'd be home at 7:30. I'm already a liar. So thank you, gentlemen, very much for coming.
Good night.
See back. I'm so thankful y'all were here and heard all this. And get back to us. Tell your people. And, you know, let us hear from you what you feel. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You, Ms.
I have some questions. This is not my line of work, so just so that I can understand it a little bit better, I'm going to kind of give you a scenario.
Okay.
As project management, you're like the office manager, and you have a technology person under you that takes care of technology, and you're overseeing that work, and you have a human resources person who's hiring, and you're overseeing that they're dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's, making sure everything's done correctly, and so on and so forth, everything that might go on in the office. So you're the office manager that's overseeing all that work, okay? Am I correct?
Sure.
Is that a good way to kind of
Good analogy, sure.
So you don't actually, like if there's a resurfacing that needs to be done, you're not going to do that. You're just going to oversee the person doing that, correct?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. It wouldn't actually be self-performing and swinging a hammer or even designing the engineering necessarily.
But you have people that are experienced in those specific areas.
Oh, yes, yes.
That are going to be overseen.
In every area.
Okay, right. I understand that now. So then my question is, I have a few. On the decisions of who's going to decide what project you all are going to be in charge of overseeing, and if need be, the third party, who's going to decide that? The board?
Certainly the board, ultimately.
And you might make recommendations?
Right. Well, ultimately, staff, I think, would recommend to the board or however that would go down. And I don't know. I don't think we don't know yet. We're just talking. No. That is exactly the type of thing to figure out.
I guess the process is, first, if the board has the responsibility and the task of approving whichever project management, whether it be the hiring contract, third party, task, whatever.
But we just determined that it could be two. It could be you all and a third party for a certain project, correct?
We didn't get to that slide, but that's pretty much what it's trying to say.
And then as far as which projects we would oversee, by that point, if the board says, well, okay, we do want TASB to come on, at that point, we're going to evaluate everything and bring all that information to administration, maintenance board, and probably CBAC as well, and say, okay, here's the list of the projects. Everyone step back and look at it. Let's see what maintenance can handle and then which ones we need to handle. We're not going to come in and dictate, okay, we're going to take these 10 because we think they're the easiest and they're the most glamorous. I mean, who wants to oversee a concrete sidewalk? But so it's not going to be dictated.
If it helps at all, a lot of the districts we work with don't have, you know, we keep saying it, but they don't have the staff or the resources. I mean, they may have staff, but a lot of times what we'll hear, even when we come in late, well, we started this, now we need help. Sometimes it's because they're frustrated at this point or in trouble at this point. They'll say, handle this and be the, you know, be in charge, stand up here in the front and be accountable. That happens a lot, and that's why we keep saying, well, in your case, we want to back up and find the right blend for you. You were kind of explaining what project manager does. I try to sum it up in one way. I don't like the term project manager. It's so broad. It can mean so many things. It's not that it's inaccurate, but what does that mean? Well, you have to explain, you know, this industry and whatnot. But there's one thing that we certainly do. We represent the owner. As an owner's representative, that's a term we use a lot in our talks. And really, we're in charge of making sure your money got spent correctly and you deliver what you promised you were going to deliver. That's the whole thing right there. And it's more than just construction, and it's more than just design, though those are really the heart of the matter. I mean, to really do it right is the big picture.
So if the project is either done in-house, and I'm assuming that you're going to determine what can be done in-house as well, give a suggestion.
Like physically done in-house?
Yes. Well, by our maintenance crews or our in-staff.
Yeah. Yes, I
like, for instance, I'm just going to give you an example. Paint.
Right.
Okay. You might say, okay, that's something that the crew under Ms. Matthews can handle.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
But let's say that there's a bigger project where the in-house people can't do it, and so they either have to go outside and hire someone or whatever. Who gives the stamp of approval? Because you're still going to be overseeing that project. But who gives the stamp of approval once it's done?
Well, it certainly might be us if we're in that role, and that's again what we're trying to do. On something like that, there's contract administration when you're hiring out, making sure the contracts are correct and consistent and smart for you and all that. Once you get that set up, it's not so hard to do that again. If you're procured or bid correctly and legal and all those things, and then the quality control of work. Even on in-house work, though, and I don't know if maybe some, I don't know if any of it is, frankly, it's usually not much in-house work from certainly your bond. Even then, they shouldn't necessarily need our oversight or anything. We don't want to just stand there and watch the damage or something. But we do want to make sure our materials and specs are pretty consistent, just to, you know, school matches. We don't want to put, you know, this paint here and that paint there or something, for example.
Another part of it is also making sure that payment retainage held until final punch list. And also at that point, it's not just us walking through. I mean, we do the majority of the punch list, but we also there are certain expectations. We think that we actually hold contractors to higher expectations than what the school district does. But we're also going to take them through it, and we're going to stand behind the school district, not the general contractor. We're there to get along with everybody, but we're there to work for the district, like you said, owner.
Well, I see it like if I'm building a house. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lend or, you know, dish out that money until I see what the contractor has done and that it's to my specs and that I know exactly what you did. So in years from now, if I need to know where that water line is, I know where that water line is. That's how I see it. You something about helping with maintenance procedures. What do you mean by that?
Just basically creating daily. There are certain tasks that maintenance and operations departments are responsible for every day. The work orders, making sure that building systems are checked. Preventive maintenance plans, making sure that you've looked at your rooftops if they're not metal roofs and arched that you can walk on. Making sure that your equipment is being inspected, written, making sure belts are checked on, air conditioners. All of those things, if they're not done, actually cost a lot to run. Preventive maintenance pays for itself easily. But it's having that plan in front of you and saying, okay, here are the 10 preventive maintenance work orders that are going to kick out over the next 2 weeks. We need to get this to the HVAC guy. We need to get it to the electrician and the plumber. There's just certain things that schools should have looked at on a regular basis that actually prevent equipment and system breakdowns.
Even if that is not part of the bond collection or whatever, you could still assist with that. That was my question.
I was going to say one nice thing about having TASB around to help you. I certainly don't think the project ends after you've cut the ribbon and celebrated and moved in. It just gets into the O&M phase. That facility never ends as long as you have that facility.
And the other one was about, you mentioned about optimizing staff time and experience. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Absolutely. That's probably core of what we've talked about tonight more than anything is we need to all figure out, we just haven't had time to listen and talk yet, just today, I think we've been for the first time, is what can the staff handle? What do they want to handle? What does the board want them to handle? I mean, all those things, their abilities, strengths, weaknesses, everybody's got all those things. And then let us, that was our next thing, so we can determine how to best join forces. You know, we may determine, wow, you can do a lot more than we thought. That's great, save you some money. Or we may determine, oh, my goodness, we really better step up and do some of these things.
To determine the needs so that you can then design the plan to help us out.
Right.
In so many words, correct?
Mm-hmm. Lily, I have a follow-up on that. You want to ask one or you have another?
I have another one, but you can go first.
Okay. I'm kind of seeing this as a bunch of baskets. We have projects, a few, that are done. On the list of 145, that's a basket. That probably needs a final audit. Okay.
Right.
And we have a set of baskets. We have some projects that are underway that our maintenance men are doing, and they need reviewed. And do we continue with our maintenance workers, or do we switch and stop and change? That's another basket. We have a set of projects that we haven't even touched yet, maybe 100 projects. That's another basket. That then we would work with you and determine what will be the method that we go about doing these. As far as the contracts, the audits, if it's going to be in-house, if it's going to be a contractor, who's going to oversee. And basically the first part of this is sitting down, getting everything in its right basket, and getting a plan in place. And TASB could help us greatly in doing that and moving forward. And then communicating that to all the parties. And so that we have agreement across the board that this project is going to be done by a third-party contractor, and this is the timeline. We get all that done. Jennifer has been trying to do that. BB tried to do that, we all know, before. And we haven't come to a nexus of agreement on any of that. You guys as professionals could come in and help us with all that. And then if we could even add a contract person, leader, who was here boots on the ground, like Leo was talking about, mm-hmm. We could get things straight in moving forward. At a much better rate.
Mm-hmm. Very, very well done.
Yeah, I mean, what we'd like to do maybe is for us to get together, put together a couple of models, and then kind of come back and present those different models or options for different scopes of work arrangements to you guys.
And this is huge, you know, what you all are saying, you know, and what we've seen at the CPAC and what Mr. Cadness is saying is, this is, I mean, when I look at it, you know, it every time I look at it, I go, because it's so vast. It's you know, like you said, the pre-K-8 is the simple part of it. I mean, at least we all can hang our hat on that one. Then, but you know what I mean? Because at least we know it's a one project thing. Everything else is so spread out. And then, how do you manage all that? And it's within a timeline that the community that it shows that we're moving forward with the community. And one of you guys said, I think it was you, sir, that you said that the communication is key. We've got to get that communication up.
The review of the ongoing contracts right now between the three architects and the CMR, which are in process, you guys might pay for yourselves just by auditing that in the next month if we get you on board.
Typically they do. Did you hear that? Typically they do.
Pretty much pay for yourself with that.
I agree with that.
Because there very well might be some cost avoidance that mm-hmm. we have no clue about. And you're exactly right. We have great attorneys. We have two attorneys that we just thank the world of. But they're not about cost avoidance. They're about making sure everything's legal.
Litigation, yeah.
And that is two completely separate things.
One quick statement before your last question, I think. You said it's a huge thing, $43 million mm-hmm. in bonds, projects. That's minute compared to what you guys do on a daily basis. You take care of 6,000 kids. What's your operating budget? 35, 40 million?
45.
45 million. But we're used to that.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying, and that is exactly why our board member said, "Help us with this because we are great." It doesn't matter what the community thinks. Sometimes they think that you're not educating your kids. You are, and you're recognized now. I think district-wide, correct?
Yes.
Not too many schools this size are recognized. You guys know how to do things extremely well. But how many $43 million projects have you managed? Which is why we do what we do.
I have to say, don't take this lightly. Appreciate that you're talking right now and having this conversation and whatever you end up doing. Too often we're getting called a year from now
mm-hmm.
by this going, oh no, and we're locked in, it's too late, or how do we dig out of this hole now?
We don't want that.
I mean, somebody said, we need you to do Project Rescue. That was kind of the term that came out.
We have ill will by then, you know what I mean?
That's exactly right. And it does get, you know, with your taxpayers, there's a point, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Not vote for that again. So, good job talking about this now. It's good. It's
we should have had you come in about 3 months ago.
We're already starting to get to rescue.
Into four contractors.
You ever heard that?
The last question, basically, yes. And this might be kind of dumb, but the liability still falls on the. You're going to give. You're guiding them, but the construction worker that's actually doing the work, especially if it's a third party, the liability is still falling there. Where, if for some unknown reason, it wasn't done correctly,
Someone is still getting paid to design, and someone is still getting paid to build. And that's not that. That's not that.
Okay.
Of course, what we're going to do is to make sure that we have to come glue the whole thing together. And claims and claim fighting is huge for claim prevention, and it comes from those two parties. So getting the contracts right, all those things, that's what we do. But yes, they are. They need to have their liability to be responsible to build, he's responsible to design correctly. And by the way, we didn't get this, but one of the things we do that a lot then is we will challenge the design team heavily. And if you sat in our talks, you probably got that feeling. A lot of those corporate managers, for different reasons, will challenge other licensed professionals. I think that's not the right way to do it. Just because you've got the stamp doesn't mean you just get to do what you want. We're going to hold you accountable as well.
Well, with that in mind, I just have some comments. Now, the thing that kind of sticks out for me is what Cheryl said about the audit of the finances. I think that's fantastic. The providing cost reductions, because you know mm-hmm. kind of where
to look.
But I'm hoping, and I kind of know the answer to this, that it's not due. A cost reduction to me is not worth it if it's going to diminish the quality of the work that's being done.
Absolutely.
I like that you know the TEA requirements, you know, that you know what's required for the district as far as, I don't know, aspects of the way it's
It's a lot, yeah. It's a lot.
And that you're going to keep that, that you would keep the bridge open or the gap between the, not just the CBAC, but community members and the district.
Great observation. So, sometimes just having a third party helps fill the gap. It makes it easier. Well, that's only that way because you said it. Well, it's only that way because you said it. Oh, wait. The third party said, okay.
Yeah,
just having that presence sometimes.
These guys got to leave at 8. They have a plane to catch at 9.
Okay.
Any other final questions for them? As I said, this is a part one. You guys will probably have to fly out here one more time. Certainly didn't talk to the other board members, but we'll try to do it quickly in the next 30 days and go from there.
Well, we appreciate it.
Thank you for letting us speak here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.